This week on the podcast, Frederick is joined by Anton Lorimer and Alistair Jolly, the creatives behind the soon-to-be-released Mobilizing for Monuments road trip video.
This is TWIP.
All right, folks, welcome back to This Week in Photo. I am your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today on the show, have my co-host here, but in a different capacity. Mr. Alistair Jolly is sitting here with his partner in crime from another part of the business, Anton Lorimer, who's our kind of superhero producer, video editor guy. So we're gonna talk about this M4M project, or Mobilizing for Monuments project, that they pulled together. We've talked about it before, but I want to talk about it from the standpoint of just the nerdness of it, like the gear, the tech, the trials and tribulations, the learnings, would you do it again, all that stuff. So guys, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Hey Frederick.
Yeah, you guys are old hats on the show. I feel like I don't need to introduce you. But if you want to be introduced to these guys, just look in the show notes for this episode. You'll see their bio and links to all their stuff and all that. But just real quick, let's just set the stage. Anton, all three of us are employed by, you know, the same company. Your responsibilities at the company are video, right? And storytelling for Smug Mug Films, et cetera. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, my sole job at Smug Mug, Flickr, ultimately Awesome, right, is basically to produce videos and film, you know, whether that's documentaries like this M4M project or vignettes on photographers, promos for Flickr or Smug Mug. So yeah, all my time, 100% of my time is I'm either in pre-production or post-production of any one project or multiple.
That's cool. So, yeah. That's cool. And then you and Alistair, you guys work kind of in lockstep with you being more on the logistical side and all that. Can you kind of explain how you guys work together?
Yeah, I mean, I work on the production side, so helping produce the content, you know, by, you know, finding artists, working on logistics, working on, you know, on days of the shoot, making sure Anton has everything he needs and making sure things are going in the background while Anton's doing the creative stuff on the ground.
Yeah, and together, the Super Friends, Making Magic, right? Or Wonder Twins. Yeah,
they're Wonder Twins.
Wonder Twins. Cool. So we're gathered here today to talk about this M4M project, or Mobilizing for Monuments project, that you guys were involved in, which was kind of incredible. And I'm jealous because you guys got to drive in Rivians through all these amazing looking vistas and all that. Let's start there. So Alistair, what was the purpose of this trip, right? Just set the stage for people that may not have heard about it.
Yeah, we've spoke about this on the show before, so I'll condense it as much as possible. Smug Mug and Flickr were both members of the Conservation Alliance, as are Rivian. And together we decided that in order to create, you know, do a cool project together, Rivian and Flickr, together with the TCA, decided we would go on a road trip and we would visit five locations across the US, visiting areas that had been designated as national monuments, so they therefore had some protection, visiting some areas that needed to be designated, so trying to highlight that these really incredible places had no protection and advocating for them to become national monuments. And we visited a couple of monuments that were looking to try and get expanded to make the area protected even bigger. So we went on this road trip with the Rivian vehicles, Anton, myself, some colleagues from the Conservation Alliance and Rivian, and our COO, Ben McCaskill, to, you know, showcase the beauty through photography and film of these areas that we were visiting.
Very cool. Very cool. And mission successful, I'm assuming?
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely a mission. You know, Anton and I, we kind of got parachuted in quite late to the project. You know, Anton and I would always say that we would like, you know, to have been in there much earlier to try and help produce it. So we got, you know, kind of parachuted in late. And yeah, we had to make magic happen with a very, very tight schedule, traveling across the US from Denver to California. Yeah.
What does the loadout for something like this look like? Like the gear, like for both of you? Like, I can't imagine. I feel like it's space is restricted because you're not the only ones in the car. You can't bring the kitchen sink, but you got a job to do. Feels very military. Like, what was the gear situation?
Well, my gear situation is usually it's condensed and it's rendered down to what one person can carry through an airport. So yeah. I'm always kind of like light and run and gun anyway. So I just brought my normal kit. I knew I was kind of worried about this project. Well, for many reasons. I mean, as Alistair mentioned, we showed up to this party when the ball was already in motion, right? So usually I have control over every project from start to finish. This one we kind of parachuted in mid pre-production, and we were kind of given this task, and we knew it was across a broad expanse of, you know, the Western US, limited time, and many, many players and many stories, right? And so I did go lighter than I typically do, I guess, because I knew I had to kind of run and gun most of it. You know, but that said, I usually go with two cameras and a couple drones and maybe a GoPro, especially if we're traveling by truck. And I think we had a Insta360 with us too.
I was going to ask about that. You're shooting 360 as well. Yeah. Yeah. Did that come into play? Did you use any of that footage? Because my experience is nice, but it's a little bit soft, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't, depending on the film we're creating, you know, it just doesn't look very cinematic typically,
right,
in my opinion. Yeah. But I think with the road trip feel, you stick the pole out of the Rivian and you're driving across a dirt road. There are instances where it's a little bit more forgiving. The viewer's thinking, okay, it's obviously Insta360. This shot is a little or different GoPro, from everything I'm watching, or a GoPro, yeah. Right? So I feel like in these documentaries, there's room for that kind of less cinematic look. But you really want to, you know, bring in the environment. And that's one of the great things about a GoPro and these 360s, which is they're super wide. I mean, in fact, the 360 is as wide as you can get, right? And so you can really pull the viewer into the environment. So
yeah.
I use anything I can whenever I feel like it, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
So Anton had all the film gear. I, you know, while I'm on the road or creating content for social, you know, capturing behind the scenes, imagery and content. And I had the lightest rig of all because I did it on this trip. I did it all on the iPhone, all the social content, all, you know, video for reels, all the BTS was all captured on the iPhone 15. So I had a very, very light rig. I took a little gimbal with me as well for the phone, but yeah, it was quite fun traveling so light.
What was that decision process like? Like the night before you had to get on the plane and there was no turning back. I always like you didn't feel like, you know, well, maybe I'll just bring, you know, a proper camera. Maybe I'll just bring the Fuji just as a backup. You never had any of that?
We had a bunch of real cameras, let's say real, because, you know, the people on the trip were taking a lot of photography. So we had a whole bunch of Fujifilm gears. We even had GFX on the trip with us. So yeah, we had a whole bunch of proper mirrorless cameras, if you want to say proper. So we had that kind of backup. But, you know, I'd been shooting with iPhone 15 for a little while. I knew how incredible the stabilization was on it, that type of thing. So for social, it was really a no-brainer, you know.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's exciting. So was it all you dreamt it, both of you guys, was it all you dreamt it would be? I mean, who doesn't want to drive across the, you know, the rural Western United States in an electric vehicle? You know, provided you can find a charger, I'm guessing, but, you know.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that.
That was a huge hurdle. But yeah, the logistics of it. I'm just glad, you know, when I go on a shoot, I want to take it in. I want to think about where I am and be appreciative of, you know, what I do, I guess. But while you're on a project, I'm just so like focused and like tunnel vision. It's all I think about. And then I come back and I edit it And then I look back and think, wow, that was amazing. But during, you know, you're just thinking, I hope we get to this location before the sun sets. I hope we charge these Rivians up so we could leave in the morning at the time we need to, because we have four more locations in 4 days, you know. But it was beautiful. And it was like, and the people along the way, the team that we had, everyone was super cool and they made it really fun. So yeah, it was. Well, at the end of it, it felt like, you know, the end of summer camp, you know.
Yeah, so you got to say goodbye. Sure. Yeah.
There was, there was definitely people on the trip had way better time than Anton and I, because we were, you know, we were getting up at 4 a.m. to start traveling and filming. You know, Anton was having to back up late into the night, make sure stuff's downloaded, backed up, make sure batteries are charged. You know, so it was, you know, seven super long days for us, but it was exceptionally good fun. Yeah, it was. We saw some of the most incredible parts of the U.S. With a great team. We saw some beautiful sunsets, sunrises, got to meet incredible people, grassroots people on the ground working for some of these grassroots organizations who, you know, spend their entire life advocating for the protection of the lands that they, in many cases, live on. Yeah. So, yeah, that was a real highlight, was the people that we met along the way. So it did feel, yeah, as you say, Anton, kind of end of summer camp when we got to the end, and lots of great memories along the way, but it was exhausting. It really was.
You know, I wonder about that. And you guys with the, again, if I brushed over it in the beginning, you guys are the force behind Smug Mug Films, which is just a list of just amazing productions. If people haven't seen it, we'll link to it in the show notes in the description for this video. But the films are amazing, right? And whenever I look at those, I'm looking at them from like a photographer standpoint. It feels a little bit tragic, right? Because I feel like these guys get to travel to all these amazing places and work. You guys, you get to, like, do you ever feel like you haven't been to a place because you've been so much running and gunning, trying to get all the assets for the story and then get to the plane and get out of there? You're like, where were we? Madagascar? Oh, okay. You know, is it ever like that?
From time to time. I think I could go to Madagascar and remember that one, but from time to time. Yeah,
singing lemur.
But I absolutely, even on our toughest days, the longest days, regardless of how tired we get, I am very appreciative of the fact that the office is somewhere out there part of the time. And I get to, I always say one of the greatest things about this job is I get to be a kid once in a while, you know, whether that's getting up before the sun comes up or hanging out of a car or a boat or, you know, talking with people, walking across the desert or something like that. I mean, that's just amazing. And I never forget that part of it. Although the other 85% of my time is sitting behind a computer and editing everything we capture. But I love it.
Alistair, you mentioned earlier that you only brought an iPhone, which I'm guessing is, you know, a relatively recent iPhone, which is highly capable for something like this. Do you, Anton, or both of you guys, do you ever think of just like, okay, we're going to standardize on mobile now that it's kind of there for the most part? Do you ever decide, you ever think about just getting rid of all the big stuff?
Are you talking about what we deliver or what we actually film on?
What you film on.
I've never shot a project on an iPhone, but I do fantasize about it. I mean, honestly, I wish I could just have three iPhones just max out with memory and travel through an airport with just that. I mean, there's something to be said about using one tool, right?
Yeah.
And squeezing the creativity out of that. I think we did a documentary on a street photographer named Alan Schaller, and he suggested that for photography or street photography, where you go out and use one lens, one fixed lens. Then instead of all these choices, you start to think about what you can capture with a lesser tool. Not that the iPhone's lesser, but I mean, and it's quite capable, but I love the idea of taking
it. Yeah, we've spoke about it. Shoot on my phone. Yeah. We've spoke about it at length of just creating content on iPhones for a project, and ideally probably with someone who uses an iPhone or a mobile device for their creativity. So yeah, if there's anybody out there that's an incredible iPhone photographer, we'd definitely like to speak to them about a project.
I mean, you know, I would think that it feels fairly Occam's razor, right? Because especially with USB-C on the latest iPhones and the ability to use external storage devices and record ProRes directly to an external device now. Yeah. I mean, you don't even have to worry about getting the latest and greatest, you know, high capacity phone. You just plug in That's your thing and go. So I wonder, I wonder what the limitation, like what's holding you guys back from doing that? Is it just, you know, we've always done it this way and we can produce a work product that everyone knows and is happy with the gear that we have now. So don't want to rock the boat, or is there some limitation that is stopping you?
I guess I would have to go and shoot like a suit, like a pseudo project or something, and find out what the, my only thing that's stopping me is what's the work or what's the workload or the work, the, what am I losing?
Workflow.
I mean, what's the workflow in post-production, and what am I losing in terms of like quality? Yeah. I mean, there's so much done in the iPhone, which I like, but I like the leeway of shooting raw. Right. So that's my only real, it's the only thing that's really stopping me.
I wonder if you guys could get to a point where you're shooting on, like you said, Anton, you got three iPhones and you're doing all the things with the iPhones, but then you're also editing on an iPad in Final Cut. And when, you know, so now your entire gear fits into like a shoulder bag or something, you know, everything for the whole production.
Yeah. I mean, what if Apple really focused on making a cinema camera that was just twice the, you know, functionality of an iPhone? It wouldn't have to be that much more, or, you know, just having the functionality of this screen on, you know, cameras.
Yeah.
It's so intuitive, you know?
Yeah. Something tells me that
along with the computational stuff that it does.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I was going to say something tells me that that's not the direction that the company's pointing in right now, is to make life better for professional photographers. I think we're kind of like a rounding error in the grand scheme of profits over there. So in terms of impact, you know, environmental impact of this project, Alistair, you said success, right? The project itself was a success. From a, okay, we got the video done and everybody loves it, I've heard nothing but positivity about the final product, which people will see soon. But you know, has the uber sort of goal of this project been achieved, i.e. awareness and movement in Washington, et cetera?
It's certainly started. We, you know, we've made a great film that we can't wait for everybody to see, because we want to impact the world with this film. But it did have a specific goal when we created this with the Conservation Alliance, is that, you know, first and foremost, we wanted to speak to, you know, the Congress and, you know, the people in power within the US. So the film has already been shown at the White House to some representatives and some other people, and has already, you know, made a statement to these people. It's already had an impact on people's thoughts about the importance to make these places, you know, national monuments, to protect them. Some of the areas that we showcase in the film were recently designated just before we went and filmed there. So, you know, there's one area called Marble Canyon that, you know, had over 10,000 licenses to go mine on that area. And after it became designated as a monument, there's only one license left in that entire area. So having these, you know, areas designated has a huge impact. We've already started that process of advocating it and having key personnel within Washington, D.C. kind of see the film and see the importance of it. We've also shown it to, you know, some other organizations that help raise money for grants for these kind of grassroots organizations, and they've been hugely impacted by the film already. So we're gearing up to its general release, and once it's on general release, we hope that it has a much wider impact. But, you know, we're already happy with the impact that it's having to that, you know, those people in Congress that ultimately we made the film to try and, you know, convince to sign certain papers, you know.
Yeah. Is this, do you feel like this is a one and done, or is this the first of many?
Anton?
Well, I mean, I think with the direction of, I know what we want to do as a company and make an impact on the world around us, I definitely think that we'll be doing more kind of philanthropic stuff like this. So
yeah,
I look forward to that.
We could, we'll be working with our partners at the Conservation Alliance. You know, we're proud members of the Conservation Alliance, so we'll definitely be looking at other projects. We've already got some that we're thinking of, but even the film that we've already made, I think there's opportunities for us maybe to look at, you know, other edits of it. I don't know, Anton and I know we both feel the same way. You know, we had this road trip where we spent 7 days on the road. Anton and I could easily have spent those 7 days in one location. These locations were absolutely phenomenal. So, you know, there is maybe even more scope to make a bigger piece about each of those areas that we highlight in the film. Or even some of the organizations that we film. There's maybe too many opportunities and too much, you know, which is a sad thing that we have to keep, you know, we have to tell these stories, you know, to try and get these places protected. They should speak for themselves, but hopefully by creating these films and showcasing them and showing them in film and photography, that has the impact of letting people see just how beautiful they are and why they should be protected.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So before we end this, we're coming to a close here. This went quick, but I want to talk about the electric vehicle part of this. Right? We mentioned chargers. You guys mentioned there may have been a little bit of stress involved with traveling across deserts in electric vehicles. How did it work?
Yeah,
what didn't work? What worked?
This project had a lot more people involved, right, from the beginning, and a good number of people on the road trip, I think. I don't know. How many people did we have?
16?
16 people. Oh, geez, right. Yeah. So that's a lot of just logistics in, you know, hotel rooms, getting up in the morning, figuring out where to eat lunch or dinner. And then you add into the equation the electric vehicle thing, which the Rivians were amazing. But we are traveling through a part of the country that it's just a dark area for chargers, you know? Yeah. You get to like Four Corners or Monument Valley, you're just looking in, you know, 50 mile directions in either way. And when you get to these locations, are they trickle chargers? Do they, you know, is it going to take 16 hours or are they broken? You know, so Alistair worked really closely and a lot of logistics were done prior to leaving on the trip, obviously. What's our route? And that, you know, where we charged and how fast it would be really dictated our path through the week, because we'd have to say, okay, we love this location. We love to drive 25 miles south because there's a second location that we'd like to shoot before the sun sets. But we'd have to calculate our mileage and say, okay, if we do that, though, are we going to be able to get to the hotel tonight? And sometimes that was a no, you know. So definitely a hurdle, I guess, you know. But it all worked out. And Alistair can speak more to it. He's a huge Rivian fan on top of this. He drove the Rivian a bit and he did a lot of work on making sure that the logistics matched up with the production, you know, because there'd be times where they say, okay, then we got to leave at 4 o'clock so that we can go charge. And we thought 4 o'clock that's the perfect time to shoot. So how do we do this?
You know? Yeah. It's interesting coming in from the logistics from, you know, the creative side where you're looking for the best light. You know, certain times of the day you want to film, those are the best times of day, but that's also when the other people consider that's the best time to eat and charge, you know, so you have a different mindset as a creative, right, compared to most people. So when they look at traveling, when we looked at the travel plan for the 7 days, you know, it was very easy to get from point A to point B and charge, but then there's no time to actually do anything creative. There's no time for interviews. There's no time to film, or it's dark. So we had to come in and shake up the whole schedule a little bit to make sure that we got the important bit, which was showcasing these places at their best. Like, we want to, you know, showcase just how beautiful they are at the best time of days, but we definitely had to make compromises. There's no way that, like, North Arizona, it's, you know, it's pretty limited when it comes to charging there. So
how did you manage that, what was the solution?
Well, every project has its scope, right? Like, you'd want to stay as long as you could possibly could to get everything you could, you know, bring home and create this wonderful piece. But, you know, this one had its limitations in time and people, you know?
Yeah.
And some days we got everything we wanted, and other days we just had to, you know, really just dig down deep and get what we could at, for 1 hour at one location. You know, the number of people that we interviewed for this project, it was like 30, which is far beyond, you know, and all 30 people had something real to say, like a real story, something significant to say about why they were there. And so you have all these locations with decades of, you know, work to get these places designated. Then you add 30 people in with all the entities that are involved. You know, it was from an editing standpoint, it was a total mess. It was like, you know, but that's the challenge. I mean, every project has its challenges. And the biggest challenge on this one was how do you, in 10 minutes or 12 minutes, create something where you tell a story about a road trip, you tell a story about history and passion for these locations and culture, and then introduce everybody, all of the entities, the people on the ground doing the work, and the corporate entities that are, you know, involved in this work as well, the TCA members and stuff. So it was a stressful edit, but I'm really happy with kind of what we finished with in the end.
It's amazing.
But, yeah.
And it's where as a creative team, you've also got to remember the brief, right? You got to remember why you're there and who you're creating the content for, because I can tell you, you know, driving through Monument Valley in the middle of the night is heartbreaking, right? It's one of the most beautiful places in the world, but it wasn't part of the film. It's not one of the five areas we're going to. So, you know, when you look at the map and you're like, oh, we're going to drive through Monument Valley, we're going to pass Horseshoe Bend, we're going to pass all these iconic places, but it's going to be dark and we're going to be doing it late at night, early in the morning, because they're not part of the brief. And, you know, so you have to remember that. You have to remember why you're there and what you're
like shooting. You said, you could spend a whole career on this effort, you know, or like Alistair said, we could have spent all 7 days at one location. So you just have to remember that it's a road trip story and not a, hey, I want to camp out here for 4 or 5 days and get to know everybody kind of story. Otherwise it would have been a 8-part miniseries, you know?
Yeah. So, which is not a bad idea. I mean, you know,
no, I'd be up for it.
It could be cool.
It is, until you remember the brief, because you know, you've got to remember who are we filming for? We're filming for members of Congress. They don't have 8 hours to watch these things.
You have to create a piece
of content that policymakers are going to be engaged with for the limited time that they have, and it has impact and tells the story we need to tell very quickly. So, you know, there's a joke. We could have made 8-hour episodes, but that's not what the job was. So
as we bring this to a close, both of you respectively, maybe we'll start with you, Alistair. Like the most impactful, memorable thing that happened on this adventure, whether related to photography or just the trip itself, like what would you say is the biggest thing that sticks in your brain?
The most impactful thing for me was seeing some of the most beautiful places in the world and being educated that there was no protection on these pieces of land. It's kind of hard to comprehend that there are such stunning, important pieces of the world that no protection at all from companies that want to extract things and, you know, that, you know, those type of decisions that can be made. That it was kind of shocking, but it was, you know, the most impactful thing for me that I learned that there are vast, vast parts of the U.S. that certainly need some protection, such as national monuments.
Yeah. A lot of empty space out there, right? Especially when you're driving through it at night, nothing like the abyss in all directions except for your headlights, right? Yeah. Anton, what about you? What's your key takeaway from this adventure?
I mean, it's kind of along the same lines, though a little different, I guess. Like all these projects, there's a little bit of a learning curve. And when I walked into this project, I thought, well, it's obvious. Like, why wouldn't you want to protect the Grand Canyon and the surrounding areas just based on their history and beauty? But I realized during this trip that their beauty and their history, it's not enough. You know, I think what the TCA is doing is right in terms of showing that preserving these places, you can start to slowly build businesses and then communities and ultimately a culture that perpetuates like these microeconomies that can keep going based on protection and leveraging these landscapes rather than extracting what's there. And so it can work. It's a win-win. It can be a win-win. And so that was like the big takeaway I had, where, you know, you think about roping off an area and you can't use it in any way. It's beautiful, but it can work with and for people too, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the big takeaway for me.
So if photographers want to get involved with this effort, M4M, or, you know, just literally exposing those areas to people so they know what's out there, what's the best way? You guys have recommendations on how to engage?
Yeah, certainly the first place to visit is the Mobilizing for Monuments website. A lot of great content on there. I'm sure Frederick will post a link to that in the notes below. You know, and that website will lead you off to learn more about the Conservation Alliance. If you're, you know, someone who's involved in an outdoor brand that, you know, uses these parts of the world for, you know, its business or for recreation, then I'd recommend maybe advocating to your organization to join the Conservation Alliance. But yeah, Mobilizing for Monuments is the website's probably the best place to start.
All right. Well, and I'll link to all this stuff, obviously, from the blog post and the YouTube description. Lastly, both of you guys are, like I mentioned before, the force behind Smug Mug Films. What's next on that list that you can reveal? Like, what's the next film we can look forward to?
We'd have to kill you if we told you. No.
Uh-oh. I don't want to know that bad.
Well, we have stuff coming up, right? We I don't know. We might be working with our old astronaut friends.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah. Is that still super secret? You can't talk about it yet?
We're working on access and getting to the space center in Houston. And, you know, but long story short, one of our old documentary, photographers, he's going back up to the International Space Station in the next, I don't know, 6 months, maybe less. Mm-hmm. 5 months, yeah. And he's going to be up there for a year. I think a year. That's the scheduled amount of time, which is crazy.
That's the plan.
So anyway, we're going to shoot that. It's going to be a long one because he doesn't get back from the space station for a year after he launches. But we're going to hopefully we'll start shooting the start of it, his training and stuff like that.
That's so cool. What a great
game. It's been 10 years since we made the first one with Dawn. So looking forward to making that one. But like anything, it's space mission wise, it's all at risk. Shall we say, for various things. So that is hopefully the next one we'll be on the road for. We're working, you know, we're looking at other conservation projects as well as our, you know, projects for our brands that we work with. You know, obviously Smug Mug and Flickr. So yeah,
love it. Very good. Thanks for doing this, guys, and the quick turn on
pleasure.
This. I know I literally sprung this on you guys yesterday, and you said yes, so thank you for
diving in. Well, we love talking about this. Yeah.
Yeah. No, great, it's good stuff. Yeah. People
really hope people. Yeah, I really hope people enjoy the film. Hope it can engage with it. And you
when
know,
does it premiere?
Spread the word.
When's the big
public
reveal?
Launch is 18th of April. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yep. 18th of April. I'll link to where that's going to be located. And we'll tell everybody about it when it's ready for eyeballs. Congratulations, guys. I've seen the film and it's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing what you guys did. And knowing, especially after this conversation and knowing all the little details that had to go into it logistically, like just driving a family through that area in an electric vehicle without trying to do a documentary, you know, a 12-minute long documentary is a challenge. And you guys had 16 people. How many Rivians? Four Rivians?
Five.
Was it?
Five
Rivians.
Five at one time.
You know, you had to build a cohesive story. And not only did you have to build a cohesive story, but that story had to convince and deliver its message. It had to do its job, right? So it wasn't like you could just say, yeah, I'm just going to take some pictures of sunsets and rocks or whatever. You had to get it done. And you did. So bravo. Congratulations.
I appreciate it. We appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah. And thank you, Alistair, for all the help. You know, Alistair keeps me out of a lot of trouble. So thank you, Alistair.
I can't stop him crashing drones, though.
Well, you trusted. Yeah, I wanted to hear. Yeah, send us off with this. Like, what equipment did you destroy?
Well, we brought a dedicated drone operator also, Cole, who was a great help because we knew we had a little bit of time in these beautiful locations. So we crashed one FPV drone, but that's kind of normal in that world, I think. So
they bounce as well.
Yeah, and then I backed the drone up into the side of a cliff.
Yeah,
we're in Marble Canyon.
No object avoidance sensors on the back of those aircraft,
Box Canyon.
Right?
Well, you know Box Canyon. But it was, but I was going full speed, and I don't know. I was thinking, oh, this, I don't know. It's been a long time since I crashed a drone, but luckily we were able to retrieve it. It was, I don't know, 100 feet up on this cliff, which I had to kind of scale this sandstone to get. And it has this beacon. It just, you know, you put in this mode, and it just starts beeping really loudly. You're just kind of looking for it audibly. And I'm just glad we got to, you know, grab the drone.
It was
unharmed, and you know, honestly, it's the footage that you fear in losing when you crash a drone, even more than the drone itself.
Right.
But
turns out when they're in sports mode, going really fast, the reversing sensors turned off. That's what it is.
That's what it was. I know. I just got a little careless. But you know, if you're not crashing a drone every once in a while, you're not trying.
Right.
You're not trying hard enough. Yeah, that's what they say. That's what they say. So. Cool. All right, guys, we'll leave it right there. Thanks again.
Thanks, Frederick.
All the links for all this stuff will be in the show notes and the YouTube description. I encourage people to head over there, check it out, get involved, and marvel at this film when you see it. It's pretty dang amazing what you guys are able to pull off. So very good.
Thanks.
We'll leave
Frederick.
It right there.
Enjoy the film, everyone.
Thanks, Frederick. Yeah.
Take care, guys.
This is Twitter.